see you coming back in here with ducky jumpsies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jumpsies.
How could anybody go and sit in a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
An amazing hurling championship all came to a slightly inglorious end as the great sport joined Manchester United, North Korea, and the idea of Dublin hosting the Olympics is being weaponized by Minister Shane Ross for a bit of idiotry and notoriety. Is this a waste of a good ticket, tweeted Ross, of a picture of Danny Healy-Ray seemingly asleep in the stands of Sunday's All-Ireland hurling final? Danny Healy-Ray, by the way, did reply that, quote, I did nothing wrong by closing my eyes for a few minutes. I've been working hard all summer helping people. Hurling has been working hard entertaining people all summer. Nobody more so than Morris Brosnan and Mick McCarthy. Welcome, lads.
Hi. When you find yourself on Danny Healy-Ray's side in an idiotry argument, you know that something's gone horribly awry.
Or is there a way to just argue that neither of them should have been there?
Yeah. Well, I will say, PJ told me only last week, strangely enough, that Jackie Healy-Ray...
big hurling man, yeah.
Was, yeah, and won county title in Kerry in the 1950s. And Danny Healy-Ray did say that he'd been at however many, like hundreds of hurling finals at this stage, I think, yeah. So, you know, I wouldn't doubt their hurling bona fides. Mm. Just, he fell asleep during the minor match, as nearly did I, to be honest.
I do think...
One-sided second half.
I do think Shane Ross should be there, by the way, Morris. He is, at the end of the day, he is sports minister. And I do think the sports ministers should be allowed to attend the All-Ireland Hurling Final.
Well, at least they can go and maybe, like, you know, some of the action, like, you know, because Shane Ross evidently knows absolutely nothing about sport, despite having the brief of sports minister. And
he's a bit of hockey knowledge.
He does, yeah. Other sport. Okay. And, you know, apparently that doesn't matter when you're, as the last two or three sports ministers have proven, it's not a requisite for getting that brief. But maybe by going to these games, something will rub off on you, and maybe like some of the actual importance and passion and, you know, severity of the occasion will somehow rub off on them into making some of their decisions.
Yeah, he'll know now that James McGrath should have got that final. Gavin Cooney here presenting the So-Called Weaker podcast, our weekly GA show here on balls.ie. Coming up on this week's show, we're going to be joined by renowned rugby ref Nigel Owens. He was among those watching the hurling final that did actually manage to stay awake. Danny Healy-Ray, he's been busy all year as well. We're going to recount our favourite moments of an epic hurling year. And Morris also got us through a fantastic piece on the site on the most influential hurling games played across the last 16 championships. First of all, lads, did the 2018 championship get the final it deserved?
Yes and no. Like, I guess, like, a conclusion like that is like the epitome of the year we've had in that, like, does this kind of narrative that, or this idea, you know, just because it might have been a slightly less quality game that we can't, you know, praise it? Because like the whole point that you watch sport like that is to enjoy it, and it was terrific entertainment regardless of wides or slightly poor touches. So overall, I think it did. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. From my point of view, the winner really defines whether or not it was a great occasion, or, you know, or whether it got the fitting end it needed because of the occasion that it was with Limerick winning. I think Galway, which I still, like, it's not as if, like, and Morris will definitely tell you this, it's not as if, like, Galway are suddenly Kilkenny or anything like that. Them winning All-Ireland is still a pretty big deal. It would only be their second one. But if they had gone out and won by 10 points and we were suddenly back to where we started at the start of the year and all of it was for nothing, I think that might have been a bit of an anticlimax. But God, being in Croke Park on Sunday, even when it looked like it could end up being a 10 to 15 point win for Limerick and Galway had no fight in them at all, it still would have been a fantastic occasion. Hmm. There would have been a certain sense of anticlimax to the finish of it, but it happening on its own would have just been quite incredible.
Hmm. Are Limerick a really great champion considering the year that we've had?
Oh, surely, yeah.
It's been kind of a year that has, you know, reawakened hurling among people who are not, okay, hurling people.
Hurling people.
To the point where... Liam Sheedy did say, I think, maybe it was after the final, maybe, I can't remember, he was on RT at some point, and he did say that, no, it was afterwards, because Limerick aren't the only winners this year. The game of hurling. So, I mean, so it is quite good, isn't it, that it's been, you know, Limerick, who had one of the longest waits for this Liam McCarthy, that they were the winners in the end.
I think part of the problem with the nature of this championship is that we kind of forget the earlier stages, but like, this is a Limerick team that have beaten Galway, Cork, Kilkenny, Tipperary, on the way to, I don't know,
five, so like, Clare now, did they?
go with me, Clare. after.
Yeah, but the Limerick didn't. They were hammered out the gate to them in Ennis.
But, you know, overall, I think that kind of route is surely, like, it's the ultimate. If anything, they've won the greatest championship of them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we're all, like, it's the perfect winners for this particular season. So when this season came alive and everybody fell in love with the game, maybe again or maybe for the first time, and all of this happened, we had Limerick all the time being, they ignited the whole thing by beating Tipperary on the first day, you know, or the second week of the championship, the first game in Munster. They then had one of the all-time great games with Cork in the draw, the first game when Aaron Glam was sent off, and you're like, God, this is a real team. Kind of like that, sort of just didn't really do much then. But then even in the quarterfinal, they had that brilliant win against Kilkenny in the rain. You're like, God, this is a great game. And that really reinforced where they were after, like, kind of after losing to Clare in the last game in Munster. And then, you know, the amazing semi-final and then doing it in the final. Limerick were there all the way through as, like, the main storytellers in this championship.
Mm. They were a great crack even in the league. I remember a tip game that didn't seem to end at all.
The semi-final that went on for years, yeah. And they had a penalty shootout against Clare that went on for, I would say, 2.5 years.
It's mental to hear them as well reference. Like, normally at this stage, when, you know, as we probably come on to next year, like, there was always kind of these one pivotal games that would ultimately define their year, and that they would all point back then and say, you know, it was that game. Like, we were talking about the Cork game. That was kind of a game where we were like, geez, this is Limerick team with the real deal. And yet all the players, Hannon and Hayes, both referenced the Galway League game when they came back from 8 points down as a game when they kind of convinced themselves that we are the real deal here. That was like, that kind of provided the platform for confidence and stuff.
You know, like, I mean, looking at it now, we're obviously not talking about that being a pivotal point. But when we were doing this podcast and we were taking the league seriously, and, you know, that was the game, and 1B was where our focus was more than 1A. Like, the constant conversation we've had with Limerick for years is that they weren't able to get out of 1B.
Yeah.
And they'd always lose that one match against that other top team, the one that mattered, and they'd be stuck down there forever. And then they went and beat Galway really out of nowhere. Like, because that's all I've been talking about this since they won. Limerick won the under-21 All-Ireland last year, which is great and is usually a sign of a team to come. And they won it again 2 years ago, like 3 years ago, 2015. And so there's pedigree there, and you knew that they were coming at some stage. But as a senior team, this has come out of nowhere in 12 months, out of absolutely nowhere. And it's just, it's unbelievable to think of that. And it did all start with them beating Galway.
Mm.
That was Galway's first game as All-Ireland champions, first proper game. And
8 points up.
And they beat them.
There's also, like, there's something to be said for, like, the genius of management to, particularly that game, when you've got all the cooler lads out and to not parachute them back in, like, or sorry, the Piercy lads, not to parachute them back in and end up also keeping them very hungry. Like, I'm sure the two Caseys and Shane Dowling were adamant that they were coming back into a team. And yes.
Yeah, and Darragh O'Donovan wouldn't have been playing. And look at the season he had, you know, and they couldn't get him off the team then once that happened, you know.
And that cultivates a level of depth, I think, that we slightly missing from Galway. Like, it was very much the Limerick bench that beat Cork. Is that fair to say for the final, or do they win it in any other areas?
No, there's absolutely no doubt. Like, God, this has been a fantastic Galway team who've lost one game of Championship hurling by a point in 2 years. So, like, you give them the credit that deserves. But in saying that, there is absolutely no doubt that Micheál Donoghue will look back at this year with a tinge of regret for not blooding this team more. Particularly given Loftus looked really good when he came on. Brian Kilcannon scored 2 goals in his debut this year. Fintan Burke has torn up on 21 this year. None of them got a sniff. Like, the 14 outfield players who started last year's final and started this year's final, there wasn't a single change. The only enforced change was Skehill because of Callahan's injury, but everything else was the exact same. There was no change. Like, not even Kilkenny at their peak didn't do that. Like, you remember reading Jackie Cottrell's book and he's talking about he's captain and he's dropped. Brian Hogan got dropped for the 2006 final. Like, there's no, that kind of, that level of familiarity and comfortability is, it breeds kind of like a certain unease amongst the squad. And the fact that personally, I actually do believe that players were there. They just weren't trusted enough when it came down to the crunch. And that's what ultimately cost them. But that, like, that level of depth was never bred in the same way it was with Limerick. Like, I'm sure Hegarty or Dan Marster were looking over their shoulder and watching Shane Dowling come on against Cork and thinking, we're in trouble here. If we don't hit the ground running, we're in trouble. Whereas I don't think that same sense was with Galway.
Mm. Yeah. Is it also, sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
No, is it just the sense of that Limerick were fitter in the sense that they didn't have as many injuries? John Hanbury's carrying an injury. Cody McInerney looked really slow on, was it the second goal, the third goal? Again?
Yeah, he got dispossessed from Morrissey's goal.
Yeah, that goal. So I guess that was an important factor as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they had a couple of less games as well, and I think people forget that because Galway, the Leinster Championship was the easier route through, let's face it, than the Munster was like a death trap. But the way it worked out for Limerick was they'd played all their games. They were already through. They kind of didn't show up in Ennis. Then they had a few weeks off. They had a quarterfinal, a fake quarterfinal against Carlow. And then they had it all set up to beat Kilkenny, you know, and they didn't. And Galway had two replays. So just, and obviously the provincial final is those two extra games than what Limerick have, you know. So it just, I think legs at the end of the year, it was a long, tough slog of a year for Galway when already they're in that horrible situation of being a team that hadn't won in a long time and wintered by bringing Liam McCarthy around schools.
Yeah.
And you also got the, like, Galway have an incredibly renowned strength and conditioning coach, Lucas from Poland, who is...
like, no one can say his name.
That's what his mother calls him.
But you can't account for the like two bruising replays back to back to be brought to a replay for the Kilkenny game. A 6 day turnarounds. Like, and at what point, like, the, me, I don't even touch on this during the week, but I know he doesn't want to come across as sour grapes, but the certain elements of scheduling will have to be looked at going forward. Like, a 6 day turnaround for the Leinster final for Galway was totally unfair. And then for Kilkenny to only have a 6 day turnaround again to play Limerick, like, that was also unfair. And then, like, you just kind of come for that Clare to bring him to replay then again. So those two, like, uncontrollable elements. And then you've got players who, you know, are constantly going down to Blackrock, swimming twice a day at times to try and overcome injuries. Like, that stuff is just...
You definitely do. Like, all those things, I think, will be fixed and are fair points to bring up. But then it's almost like it annoys me that Micheál Donoghue is the one saying it, because there's a part of me that thinks you didn't do anything about those things. That's the way the cookie crumbled, and you needed to make some changes.
I agree with you.
In my opinion, I don't care how good a player Gerald McInerney is. I don't care if he was hurler of the year last year. If he hadn't trained for 3 weeks at this level, coming into a team firing on all cylinders the way Limerick was, I'm sorry, there has to be a better centre back there who's fit. You know, like, he might not be as good a player. And I think it really cost him. And then even just like, if Hanbury isn't ready, you have nobody else you trust. It goes back to what you were saying earlier about blood and players. And that's the manager's fault, you know?
Yeah.
And they could adapt to that long season and to all the slogs that they went through and the injuries that were there if they had the processes in place. And there was a good few things, I talked about it already, I'm not going to go into it again. There was a few things on Sunday at the game that really just felt to me like the Galway line, the Galway management weren't at full pace even if the players were.
Yeah, like, it probably is worth, you know, clarifying that, like, you give full plaudits to Limerick, like, but the reality is that they did almost, you know, they almost messed it up in the end, and like, you're like, that's just the way it was, and that's a testament to Galway, it's also a testament to Limerick just to see it out like the way they did in the end. But there's
Graeme Mulcahy didn't get that score, you know, like, and it was a really, really good point. Like, Limerick were gone. Limerick's heads were gone.
Like, Daly was,
Kyle Hayes was rightly man of the match. I thought he was fantastic. He snatched a three shots or two shots maybe, and someone else was the third one that just went wide, that you knew the second they hit it was wide. Like, they just, their heads were gone. It was the 5 minute final on steroids.
Yeah, Anthony Daly was referenced in 94 on commentary mid the comeback. Like, this, it was like, oh, no way is this happening again. Like, it was definitely kind of that element. And like, I suppose in the end it didn't really matter, but it was definitely there.
You mentioned earlier about how Galway's on the sideline perhaps weren't as sharp as they perhaps should be. You can listen to that on this podcast feed with Dahi Regan and Brendan Booger.
Exactly. That's why I didn't want to go into it again. Yeah, but absolutely. Yeah, good chat with the lads that we had just straight after the match, just back here in the office. The three of us come down with our programs full of notes and mistakes on who scored what and everything like that. Can I tell you really quickly one of the best moments in Crow Park?
Go on.
Just at half time where they always announce the attendance. It was like, we're delighted to say that the attendance today is full house. And it came up on the big screen as full house. There was no number. The official attendance was full house.
Danny Healy Rice startled awake, I think, by that announcement. Come on, let's get angry at the Sunday game for a minute. The man of the match was Kyle Hayes. The other nominees were, someone remind me, Joe Canning.
Mannion and Joe Canning.
Bork Mannion.
Two Galway players.
Kyle Hayes was the man of the match. Is that the correct decision, lads? Well,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. He gave McInerney an exhibition. Yeah,
and as I said, maybe McInerney was there for the taking.
But even, you know, it's funny.
Hayes was fantastic.
You mentioned, I was actually speaking to Di Regan after the game, and one of the things, he's coached McInerney before, and he said as soon as he saw Hayes pulling him out to the right and out to the field, he's like, he knew he was in trouble. Like, he's watching that. Like, we were speaking on the benefit of hindsight that, you know, maybe the man didn't react positively. But he's watching that in play and he realizes, oh, like, McInerney's in trouble. And that, like, they don't address that. They don't do anything about, like, even swap him off or do what Hannon did, which was let him sit in front of the back four and let someone like Johnny Cohen drop off. But it just, that kind of reactive element, it didn't happen. Like, I don't know what happened. I do feel that Sutton was slow to address that.
Yeah, but Hayes, and I didn't see this in the game when they went through these things, but one of, like, Hayes obviously scored those really crucial few points at the start of the second half and in general dominated McInerney. But there was one for Graeme Mulcahy's goal in the first half. Hayes was very close to where I was sitting. I was sitting basically on the ground along kind of like just off the 21, and he ran through on the left hand side, and I didn't see the ball that he played back to Mulcahy there. You know, the obvious choice was to tap it over the bar, but like, it was right in the same place as him, and it was just this brilliant bit of vision. Now, Mulcahy kind of ended up doing about 500 things before the ball went into the net, including like a fool of Skell, but it was just a brilliant, brilliant pass, you know? He was really, really good.
Yeah, man, you got a shoulder in the back. That should have been a free out, but anyway, we're not bitter about it.
It was a shoulder in the shoulder. It was one of, it was a fine shoulder.
So, Mick, you were...
The back of the shoulder.
You were at the match, Mick. You'll have missed any RT commentary, which Michael Dagnan and Marty Morrissey didn't see a free in the first half at all. There's a moment in the first half when... I'm so bad at names. I can't remember who it was, but someone shouldered
Johnny
another...
Glynn's shoulder in the face.
It was Johnny Glynn in the face. And Dagnan and Marty were like, there's no free, I see no foul there. It's like, ah, lads, come on. And then Marty, now, like, I really like Marty Morrissey, but his rapping Linger by the Cranberries midway through the second half was a heightened nonsense.
I've heard about this, yeah.
That can stop now.
Yeah. It's probably time to give it back to Jer, is it? For a couple more years before he finish.
I put Marty on the radio commentary, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of radio commentary, Anthony Daly is the best co-commentator. He was on RT Radio. I had it in my ear during the game, wasn't it? And he was just fantastic. Like, he set up the finale by talking, first he talked about 94, then he talked about Limerick and Clare and the relationship between the two and how he'd no ill will about them. He just, his entire, as a co-commentator, he's absolute genius.
I've actually got a few stats from the game before we stop talking about it from Shore, official statistics partner of the GEA, that I think we should talk about that are kind of interesting. The thing that jumps out to me is, we were talking before we came on about how is this a one-point game when Limerick seemed to dominate in every facet of play, and obviously Galway did come back into the game, but it was like they shouldn't have been in it in the first place. And one of them that I'm surprised about is that even though the wides was 20-16, the scoring chances from play was a much wider gap. So Limerick had 37 scoring chances from play and Galway only had 27. So sometimes we can just look at wides as a stat on its own and you're like, oh, they're kind of even. Maybe it's nothing to do with that. Both teams hit a lot of wides, and they did. 20 wides is a lot in the game. Like, but it was only 4 more than Galway. But 10 more scoring chances, I think, says a lot. That's a couple of balls dropped in on top of Skettle. It can be block downs, whatever it is. And I think that's one of the things that Limerick, despite scoring 316, you know, 16 points isn't a lot in hurling these days. They only scored 2-6 in the second half. And I think that's one of the things that they just didn't. They weren't that clinical for a finish. And obviously, when they needed to, they got those couple of goals. Yeah. And they did. And Mulcahy got that point when they needed to. And they were, for me, by far the better team in the game, which is one of the reasons that having two Galway men nominated for man of the match surprised me, you know. But I think that's one of the ways that we can look at it as to how Limerick kind of kept Galway in the game. And another one is how Galway stayed in the game was their discipline. So whether Michael Dagnan, Marty Morrissey or James Owens believed freeze should exist or not, they did give, freeze conceded in opposition half. Limerick gave away 10, Galway 3.
3?
Yeah, so Aaron Glan had 3 frees inside his own half, or inside the Galway half.
And missed 2,
And missed, what, 2, was it? Yeah, yeah. I think one of them he might have missed was a 65, so I'm not 100% sure about that. But that's a remarkable discipline for 80 minutes of hurling. And they only gave away 6 frees overall. Limerick only had six frees.
Do you need to contextualise that by the fact that oftentimes when it was Hayes or Mulcahy, they were scoring without anybody anywhere near them. They couldn't even foul
possibly,
them.
Possibly, like, yeah.
They were in 10 yards space.
Couple of times it was advantage or whatever it might be, yeah. And maybe Galway should have had worse discipline and rugby tackled them up to the ground a little bit more often, you know?
There's no cynicism in hurling, mate.
We're going back to, we had this debate on this programme about how much importance you relay on free taking. Like that's what kept Galway in the game. Like after 15 minutes, Galway had 10 points. It's historic low shooting for that team. Like
ridiculous,
the team had 116 against Clare, 114 against Kilkenny. 10 points is all they had. But the only reason that they stayed in touch was, like, despite the fact that everything was malfunctioning, was Joe kept us tipping them over. Like you were saying at one stage in the first half, you're looking, like, has Joe touched the ball? You look down, he's got six scores because they're all just tipping over frees.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Joe ended up with a like, don't get me wrong, was absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. I'm actually going to not talk about something because it might come up a little bit later on that he did. But just on the last stat from Shore then, hooks, blocks and tackles. It's to make the same point that how a one-sided game ended up being so close, that some of the more hidden things were actually more even than we thought. And one of this was that hooks, blocks and tackles for Galway was 33 and for Limerick was 36. Sorry, I'm just adding them up there. No, sorry, 32.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's less. Wow. So,
I have to say, looking on, you'd assume that Limerick monstered them. Just glancing at the game, because you saw, especially near the end, like Limerick kind of gigging, pressing Galway out of existence, but you had four or five players around the one guy. And obviously, it's a very obvious one that led to Morrissey's goal.
And there was a lot of that. There was a lot of that in the first half as well, with like Skettle's short puck outs, and Limerick were pressing up on them, and Galway didn't seem to adapt to the fact that short puck out just wasn't on, and there must be room down the other end. And like, so that again did surprise me. But you look at it and it's like Galway just hung about a little bit, you know, and did some of the basics that we weren't looking at quite well, you know. And they might not have been as catastrophic for Limerick as they were for Galway, but they were still doing it, you know. And then ultimately, when they did come back into the game, Limerick sort of maybe were a little bit rattled then, you know.
Yeah. Morris, you were speaking to Nigel Owens.
I was, yeah. I don't know how I'm going to set this up.
Yeah, do you know the question or anything? And
you just do, here's a little bit of it or something like that. Why you rang him? Because he told you to, but in fake terms.
Yeah, sounds good. I was, yeah. I saw him, he was tweeting during the game, and I thought it might be an interesting one to follow up on. So why he was actually following the game. So he gotten John Lacey, who's an Irish referee from Limerick, was on to him to tell him that he should watch the All-Ireland final. And then on Saturday, he refereed Bristol. Were playing, I think they're playing Saracens, but a Scarlets they were playing. And playing that day was Ian Madigan. So Ian Madigan mentioned to him that the game was on, and he told him about the rules, and he decided to sit down and watch it on Sunday. So here's what he thought of it.
Really engrossed in it, really, because I was sort of surprised how fast it was, and obviously, you know, they're amateur players as well, and how fast and physical the sport was, how exciting it was, and from what I've been told as well by quite a few people, it probably wasn't the best game of hurling compared to some other games that have been, but particularly the last sort of 10-15 minutes or so was so exciting as well, and I really enjoyed it, you know. I probably need to sit down and watch a bit more of it to sort of get into it a bit more, but I had the gist of what it was all about and a little bit of the basic rules of it, so I was able to sit there and watch it. And it was interesting, really, because I was watching and thinking to myself, well, when somebody's watching a game of rugby for the first time, this is probably what they're experiencing, is seeing exciting but not knowing some of the laws and trying to get a grip with what's going on. And here I was watching a total different sport, trying to get a grip of what was going on and try to understand some of the laws, although sometimes I thought there wasn't any rules in the game or something. And so I can understand, it gave me a total perspective then of when people sit down and watch a game of rugby for the first time, or when I try to explain to people what a great game of rugby is, and they know nothing about it. This is what it was like for me now, watching hurling, people saying how good it was. Had a couple of jests about a bit of the laws from Ian Madigan, about a couple of the basic laws, and from George Clancy and John Lacey as well. So trying to get a grip of it all, really. So obviously, what you didn't have was was the referees, Mike, explaining some of the decisions or why, although there weren't that many decisions in the game compared to what rugby was. So it was really interesting from that point of view as well. But I got to say, it was the physicality of it, the speed of the game, the skill of the players, the excitement. And as well, what really hit me was the passion of the crowd, very similar to a rugby crowd in one sense. Very passionate for it. And also as well, when I was listening to the interviews afterwards, when one of the Munster players were, I'm sorry, one of the Limerick players was giving an interview when he was nearly in tears on what it meant to him. And I thought, this is what rugby's like as well. You know, when you have your local teams, your community teams, my village team, this is what it means to those players who play rugby at the amateur level of it.
The impression of the game, you get out of it what you put into. It's like a walk of life. If you're good enough, go out and get it, no more about it. If your mother sends you down to the shop for a pound's worth of goods and she gives you 50 pence, you can't get the pound's worth of goods, can you? Limerick went out there from the word go today. No more about it. They made all the run, that was it. Put the ball over the bar and the back of it, and that's it. No ifs, no buts. There's no sympathy in this game for anybody.
That was great. That full interview can be read on site on Balls.ie right now. Elsewhere, if you peruse Morris Brosnan's byline and Balls, you come to From Drug Test Snobs to Sponsored Hurley's Hurling's Road to 2018 Nirvana. This is pretty great, I have to say. So, Morris, you want to explain the concept of this piece, and then we're going to pick through some of the best parts of it.
Yeah, sure. So the idea came, there's an American journalist who writes about basketball and rap. His name is Shea Serrano, and he wrote a book a couple of years ago about the development of rap music. So he's talking about how rap music came to essentially exist as it currently does. So he started in 1979 with the first commercially successful song, and talked about the impact each song had on that year. So based off that premise, I had an idea about, could I pick the most important championship hurling game from every single year? And I decided I'd start in 2002, because that was the year the back door as we know it came to exist, and also because anything longer was just not feasible. So basically what I'm doing is, I'm not like the most important game, when I say that, I'm talking about the impact that had on the sport. So not the best game. Now they can overlap, but you know, like the classic example would be 2004's Munster final was definitely the best game that year, but it was also hugely important in terms of what it meant for Waterford. Like Ken McGrath spoke about, every county needs a day like this, but also what it meant for Cork. So I spoke as part of this piece, I spoke to Gavin McCarthy, who scored a goal from Cork that day, and he said from that game on, after they lost to Waterford in 04, Donald O'Grady started bringing butter in freezers to every team meal, and he'd run around and pick up all the butter that was on the tables and put out this low fat stuff. Like, it was that minute. They were so kind of focused after that game that they're that drilled in. So that's basically what I'm talking about. It's like these games that had massive repercussions, both for, you know, teams or these dynasties, or just in terms of tactically.
Yeah. 2005, Cork won the All-Ireland again, but they don't appear here. What does appear here is Galway 5-18, Kilkenny 4-18.
Yeah, that's great. Like, that is the...
What a match.
Yeah, and that is the origins, in a lot of ways, of the great Kilkenny 4-0 team. Like, that game, like, what it meant for them. So there was, like, this... Tony O'Regan was playing fullback for Galway. I spoke to him about that day, and he himself referenced the fact that he knows that seemed to kickstart them on for the next 3 or 4 years. Like, you got to the stage where, like, his line is, Kilkenny were thirsty for blood after that day when they lost. And ultimately, like, you got this Kilkenny kind of like ruthless team that you know, Jack Thrill wrote about this in his book. Like, they didn't just want to beat teams after that, they wanted to hammer teams. Like, they wanted to put 10-20 points on teams. Like, they called themselves assassins. Like, there was this kind of this edge that became into Kilkenny after that 0-5 game that I don't think might have been there previously, and it ultimately drove them on to you know, this great dynasty that won 4 in a row.
Yeah, and also that kicked off then in 2006. 2007, Kilkenny are absent here. I'm looking at Wexford 3-10, Tip 1-14 in an All-Ireland quarter-final, and poor old Babs Keating.
Yeah.
Turfed out again.
I mean, so this is like you couldn't say this is the genesis of player power, given what happened in 2002 with Cork, but this is when you started to see, like, players themselves, and I think even, like, hurling pundits start to confront kind of how old school certain elements of, you know, her old hurling managers were. Like, this is a year before Jerry Lachlan leaves Galway, but even, you know, Lachlan has said since then that he realized he'd been left behind tactically. Like, what he brought to Galway was no longer good enough to win on Ireland. And the same thing is true of Keating. And what you see is, like, Corbett and Brendan Cummins both talk about this in their books, kind of the confronting that you no longer have to, or you're willing to accept it. And based off that, you see kind of this, like, not players take all power, but definitely this, like, players are going to have their say and are no longer going to, you know, bow down to supposed great, I mean, not supposed, like, definite greats, but who may have been slightly left behind by, you know, just by general development of tactics.
Mm. Yeah. Also, like, you, whatever happened in O2 and the strike, it was for lots of different reasons.
Exactly,
To, like, you know, how trip players have been looked after and the birth of the GPA. But then this was an old-fashioned manager laying down the law, and we're like, you're not laying down the law to us. You're not, like, you're dropping Owen Kelly and Brendan Cummins here in 2007.
Mm.
It's like, we can't, like, this is ridiculous. And then Tipper in the All-Ireland final in 2009 and win it in 2010. It's very quick after, a lot of the same lads. You
and
know?
It's we actually have seen the process that started from that, from replacing Keating and getting Sheedy in and ultimately O'Shea, like, that has ultimately ran its course right up until this year. It was the same kind of, that was the genesis of this really minute, like, detailed Tipperary setup that, you know, developed all Ireland wins in 2010.
And obviously this year was the last year that with Michael O'Ryan going.
Exactly.
You know why Babs Keating left Offaly in 98? It was through illness and fatigue, because the players were sick and tired of him.
Sheep at a heap.
I'm not going to do every one here because
there's some brilliant memories in this, though, when you read through it. Like, I read through it on Sunday morning, and I was just sending Morris message of little add-ons to things that I remembered, and, you know, like, just kind of pure nostalgia, whereas he's making this, like, brilliant journalistic point as to why these things are important, and he's dead right, and all I can think of was, God, I remember where I was for that match. I had 6 pints on me at it.
And it's funny to say that, because it's like, this was I say this without any kind of bunch of, this was the most enjoyable project I've done since I started working for Balls. And the reason was that anybody I engaged with, whether it be in this office or elsewhere, was so, like, that sense of nostalgia and why you kind of, like, it was like this great add-on of, like, why we enjoy this so much and the way we do. And it was like, but whether it be, you know, journalists or players who I spoke to for this, they were all kind of totally willing to just, like, you know, chat shite about hurling for an hour. And, like, and it was great. Like, it was so kind of enjoyable. Like, it's kind of this kind of, you know, trip down memory lane for them, and this kind of massive knock-on effect for me. So, like, it was definitely, in that term, it was magic. Like,
yeah. One thing I definitely do want to talk about is the 2009 Leinster final between Kilkenny and Dublin, because this has kind of set the template now for what hurling has become in the last even 6-7 years,
yeah,
8 years.
Yeah.
In something that we're only really began to talk about last year.
Yeah.
And sorry to let you sit you up, like, that we talked about this on Sunday morning. Like, this is 2009, when the All-Ireland final was arguably the greatest game of hurling ever played. And I think that sums up what this actual piece is about more than anything, mm-hmm. is that it was the best game, and it set up the next 3 years or 2 years, but the Leinster final might have set up the next decade.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. Yeah. So what happened in 2009 was that in 2008 and 2007, Kilkenny had gone out and won the Leinster final by 17 and 16 points respectively. And then 2009, they're facing a new Dublin team under Daly, who they're expected to absolutely wipe the plate with. So you have to bear that in mind. And in 2009, Daly, he'd done it once in 2004 with Clare, but he brought in a sweeper. So yeah, we hadn't seen this in Ireland before. Like, you could argue you saw it in football with Tyrone, and in, you know, Galway in the 80s had experimented with, like, a third midfielder, but this was, like, a totally novel tactic. And also was kind of like and still is to a certain extent kind of derided at the time, but he brought Johnny McCaffrey back out and played Boland in front of him, and it worked. They kept Kilkenny, after 55 minutes they were within 4 points at that great, like, this was the great Kilkenny team. They're within 4 points of them. They end up losing by six. Like, it was the first time you kind of saw this, and that, like, that same tactic that led a template down for Davey, for Derek. Like, all of a sudden this was kind of a way of, like, leveling the, you know, the barrier. That's all it does. It's like this massive lever where we can counter great teams. Because in hurling, like, it's funny, oftentimes in hurling, it's so hard if you get a weak team and a small team to level the playing field, because normally there's so much space and so much, like, you can move about 100 yards. Teams just blow them out. But Daly kind of proved that there are ways to, like, that, like, tactically he was before his time in terms of, like, there are ways to kind of, you know, level the playing field, even if when you're at such a weaker disadvantage.
Yeah.
I think that's over now. I think the last year was the end of it.
I think it's been found out.
Wexford, look. Now, what Clare did against Galway the first day was use it as a as an adaptable tactic.
Yeah.
So in a game, you can do it. But I think the idea of somebody lining out with seven backs is gone now, you know? Because you can still have 10 backs if you want that also have to do other jobs, you know? I just think that I think the usefulness of it, I think if you watch the Clare Wexford quarterfinal this year, you'll see just how limp Wexford looked just playing that extra man. It seemed pointless, you know?
The biggest problem with it, though, is that it's, especially with a team like Wexford, it's we were talking about this with Galway last week. When Wexford use it, they're a moving target. Like, they're a sitting target. You know exactly what they're going to do. Whereas Clare, that was reactive within game. That was good management. It was in-game, Johnny Glynn's, you know, getting run of the game, and they react in game to do it. Like it
they started it then the following day, and Galway were ready for it, and it was useless. It was useless, you know. Exactly. And then Clare only came back into it when they left it the second time, you know. So I think as a constant tactic, even for Waterford, we'll see when they have a new manager now next year. But
yeah, well, we can't recommend that post highly enough. It's on Ballsaturday right now. Sorry, I'm just gonna insert a break there, and then we'll do
moments.
Now, so the 2018 championship is over. Sad times.
We've only got a bloody football final to go. Oh no, we've the under 21 final next week. Cork and Tip.
We've picked our three favourite moments each. So I mean, will we go around one by one?
Do you want to start? Because we're doing all the talking here. What's your number? Do you want to go 3-2-1?
I haven't put them in any particular order.
Oh, okay.
And I've actually possibly just changed one just as I started reading. This one I'm definitely including my top three is Peter Duggan's point when he was festooned with Galwegians.
Yeah, magic. Festooned with Galwegians.
It was insane.
It's a remarkable point. Yeah, yeah. Like, and it was part of a comeback. It wasn't just a score in isolation that happened in a 10-point win or a 10-point loss. You know, it ultimately was an unbelievable score in a comeback draw.
It was also a kind of confirmation, at least in my head. I don't know, maybe Mick, you might be more, you know, fixed to talk about this, but it was confirmation for me that Duggan has, you know, like, he's announced himself as just so much more than just a free taker. Yeah. Like, this year he's done it. Like, he was their primary ball winner from puckouts, probably. Mm. Like, his in-game play, his tackling when he's working back. Like, this was the year where he kind of, I thought he came out on the national stage and said, you know, this is it.
And that point is immortal.
Yeah.
So always have, like, Peter Duggan will be remembered for that more than he's ever remembered for frees. But when Peter Duggan came on the scene, that very, very short aside, when he came on the scene, like, there was an element of, like, we can't be carrying a lad who's only there to win puckouts.
Yeah,
he wasn't taking frees. Kelly was on the frees. Reedy was on the frees. This is about 2 years ago. And he'd win a puckout and do nothing with it. You know, because it's not really his fault, just the way they closed down. And didn't really contribute much in open play. And his development, he went on a run with Clooney Quinn in the Clare Championship last year, where he was just like knocking over 12, 13 scores from frees a game, and had a decent year with Clare too. The player he's become this year is just an unbelievable development of a hurler. Like, you know, he's only 24 as well, you know?
Yeah. It's also a pretty iconic image, you know, if you take a screen grab of batting over that point. It's like, you know, the Maradona against Belgium picture, or the Iniesta against Spain. Or against Iniesta against Italy, sorry.
Against Italy, I was going to say.
pretty iconic. Will I do my next one now?
Yeah, no, go for it. I'd say go.
I was thinking about putting in Shane Downing's interview with Damien Lawler and Sky on Sunday.
I thought of that.
But I've gone with Nicky Quite safe in the semi-final. Yeah. Because it's just, like,
you've taken two of ours, I think, here.
I probably have,
I've gone different.
I genuinely squealed and got out of my seat on that.
Yeah.
And my third is Joe Canning's goal in the final, because it was arguably the most clutch moment I've seen someone deliver in an All-Ireland final. And while the scoreline didn't work out for him, I cannot believe that he put it in. I was thinking, I watched it with my housemate, and was like, what'll he do? And I say, would he go for goal here? And I said, no, he'll tap it over the bar. He'll have to tap it over the bar. He'll probably not score that. It's not worth the risk. And straight in the top corner. It's stupid.
I had the exact same conversation with a angry and frustrated and heart attack having Galway man sitting beside me who I didn't know. And he was like, he has to put it over. And I'm like, he should probably go for it. I said, you've nothing to lose. Like, you're probably going to lose anyway. Would you not give yourself the chance? And, oh, what a finish. And I have that as well.
It is a moment for me, because I was around two-thirds through the game. And I was like, hold on. Joe Canning hasn't featured here at all. Who the hell is going to be hurling of the year? Because Limerick are such a good team. It was hard to pick out one guy. Because Canning was my tipper hurler of the year before that. And then the way, how important he was in the finale. And if that game was 2 minutes longer, Galway would probably be all Ireland champions at the moment. And there'd be no doubt about Canning being hurler of the year. So I think that really sealed it for him, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, it's a good choice. There might be someone else have that in a second.
Morris, did I not steal any of you?
No, the only one you took was Quaid save.
Okay.
I think that's fair enough. The other one, but one is, as is my right as eternal hipster in this show. James Burke's performance in the Christy Ring final for Kildare after coming out of an induced coma in February to turn on.
I hope we don't take the piss out of you for that on the so-called weaker podcast. So we haven't mentioned a weaker county yet.
But. Just for people to remind people about what happened here, Christy Ring final, James Burke scores 8 points after he missed a lot of the league. Played okay, but then in February was put in an induced coma because he had meningitis. One thing that didn't get as well publicised about James Burke had never played senior hurling for his club until he went into play Christy Ring this year because he was a minor, which Selbridge last year wasn't allowed to play. Yeah. So he'd played senior inter-county before he played senior club and ended up doing that in a Christy Ring final, which is pretty incredible.
That's brilliant. I had forgotten that. That's actually that should be moment of the year if it was more famous, you know?
That's
fantastic.
The other one is, this is this is in... As an isolated moment, it means nothing, but it's more so in as a narrative and what it meant for both Limerick and also think it's Limerick when they played Cork and Galan got sent off, and it's when Mulcahy started hopping off Coleman on the sideline. The two of them were just going toe at it, and it was the first time that kind of it was that point where you're like, geez, Limerick could physically put it up to Galway. Like this team could, at the time I thought nobody could match Galway, but then in the circumstance of Limerick 14 men coming out against Cork. Like, that game is the game when we all sort of realise this round robin is brilliant. And it's also the game for me that we kind of realise this Limerick team is the real deal. And it was that kind of watching Mulcahy, who's probably, I know, like you mentioned, Joe, I think Mulcahy is definitely running for Hurler of the Year. It was that kind of moment where I was like, wow, this Limerick team, like, not only are they immensely talented hurlers, there's a steel to this team. Like, there's a character and they could kick on, and which they did.
Mm.
Limerick are a huge team. And it's funny that you say that about the smallest that they have, you know? Because they are actually very big. You see them in the parade, like, they're big, big men. Like, you know, Mulcahy's the only kind of... He's the classic number 15 on that team, you know?
Yeah. And we always talked about Galway's physicality. And we never really mentioned Limerick.
No.
Not. Maybe it's because people keep raining balls in Davin McInerney and Burke. Like, stop doing that.
And then they did.
Mick, what three clear moments?
No, I think Morris has one more.
My other one was Quaid.
Quaid, sorry.
What three clear moments did you pick, Mick?
Do you know what? I only picked one clear moment. I decided, Canning's goal, first of all, right, I did pick because there's some moments of just, like, seeing that, being there, and, like, sometimes with those freezes out when you're live at the game, you don't really see where they end up. I saw that hitting the top corner. Yeah. It was the unstoppable shot. Had a conversation the day before we did a show with Brendan Cummins, Cyril Farrell, and Donal O'Grady from Limerick, and I was talking to Donal and Cummins before the match, and we were talking about... who are we talking about? Someone who takes freeze. Dowling. Dowling's the semi-final was on randomly on the screen in the pub, you know, and I was talking about how he just hit that such a beautiful penalty. And Cummins was saying, it's why I don't understand how Joe doesn't score every penalty there is, because he's the best striker of the ball there is in the game. And he should just have that hit and pass you before you know what happens. And all I could think of was this happening. Whoa, when Joe steps up to take this free. And for the first time nearly ever, because he's not the best, you know, goal free taker that there is, penalty taker, he did exactly what Cummins had said to me 24 hours beforehand, and he had it past him and in the top corner before they knew what had happened, you know? And it was just a brilliant, brilliant moment. And it was the best hurler in the country stepping up at the most important time and being the best hurler in the country and really just if he had got that free, if that free was 15 yards closer, or whatever it was, Joe Canning bringing to a replay, imagine what we'd be saying about him now. So, sorry, I know you'd already mentioned that one, but...
No, it's class, yeah.
Just unbelievable. I have a big list of ones that didn't even make it, to be honest. Okay, that I just,
rattle through them quickly.
Ozzie Gleeson's catch of the ball that wasn't over the line against Tipperary. Oh. Not quite moment of the year in any kind of a positive way, but just as an absolute farce, and the excitement and buzz and anger that generated. Yeah. Like, you know, I have the Limerick Cork draw, as you mentioned, not as specific a moment, which is probably why I didn't pick it, but it was just that game and the feeling I had at the end of that game of just like Saturday night, this is just fucking brilliant, you know. Dublin running Kilkenny and really should have beat Kilkenny. If Dublin, like, they almost should be on this because they should have won that day, you know, and that would have been just so out of nowhere. And just watching Conall Keeney at like 36 years old being the best player on the pitch, you know,
they were horse for the ref. That was a push, was it, by Liam Blanchfield just before the goal?
I probably think so, but it felt like Kilkenny were just going to get back into it anyway, you know. And then lots of things about Limerick and Kilkenny in the quarterfinal I just love so much. Owen Murphy's consistent, incredible saves, where he had about four of the best saves I've ever seen in the space of about 10 minutes. And just the realisation that Limerick were for real and the team that showed up in Ennis was just a one-off, you know, and that they're actually the team we've seen in the rest of the round, Rob Murphy. Anyway, the two I did go for, right? The one selfish one I went for, Ian Galvin's goal against Tip for Clare in Thurles. Everything about that, right? There is, from the neutral point of view, there was this game where Clare were hanging on. Tip have the game won, hit the post, and it's something like 18 seconds later, Clare go down, and Galvin just rattles it into the back of the net, and suddenly it's game on, and Clare obviously go on to win it with those couple of brilliant points from Duggan. So that was amazing in itself. And then from the personal point of view, is like I'm sitting in a packed stadium in Thurles, where I don't think I've ever been to a Clare Tip game in the championship. I don't think there's ever been one, you know, that since 1984 or something like that. And I'm surrounded by Tip people, and that goal just goes in, and it's just this, from the depths of just like, we're not doing this, we're out of the championship. It all seems so good after the Waterford game, you know, and I can't believe we're out, to this is on, jumping up and down. And honestly, from that until the final whistle and going out into the pitch after, it felt like an All-Ireland, because it was Tip, and it knocked Tip out. There was so much to that game that just is forgotten about, obviously, in an incredible season. But it was just absolutely amazing. And then for me, the top moment would be the last 5 minutes, if that's not too indulgent for a moment, of normal time in the Cork-Limerick semi-final. Because we'd had the Clare-Galway game the day before, where like 10 minutes from the end, I remember turning around to a Galway guy who had a little bit of needle wit in the game, and it was a bad atmosphere between the my group and his group. And I remember just turning around to him and said, like, this is some bloody game. And it changed the atmosphere completely, to where at the end of the game, we were just shaking hands. We were going, Jesus Christ, I can't believe it. It's nearly in tears, you know. To the next day, watching that game again, and Cork just getting on top of it. It had been a brilliant game. To Limerick somehow just getting that run of scores together and coming back into it and getting it level right on the full-time whistle, to where you're almost bloody sitting there in tears going, what has happened over the last 2 days for this game to give us so much, you know? And yeah, it became ridiculous 3 or 4 days later, when mixed with the fact the timing of that documentary and those two games happening together, where it became like hurling people talk hurling and deride everything else. But in that moment, before that became a problem, I don't think I've ever had more sort of pride in a sport than I did in those 10 minutes waiting for extra time to start, you know? So brilliant. For me, that's the moment of the year.
Yeah, what a year. Briefly, hurler of the year. Mine's, I'm saying Joe Canning.
I say Park Mannion.
Declan Hannan for me, but I definitely wouldn't begrudge Joe getting it.
Yeah. What? That was unanimous.
Well, it's a weird year, you know, there's so many games. Now,
eagle-eared listeners will know that this is usually the part of the show where we play guest spreads. There's no senior hurling or football this weekend, so we're doing something else, and we're going to put Morris and Mick's knowledge to the test with a special so-called Weaker County-themed quiz.
Oh, no.
I'm going to say one thing. I stood here 3 weeks ago and I pleaded with the fans to give us space and to allow us focus. I now say to the fans, can you please go absolutely mental for the next couple of weeks?
God, just when I was feeling so good about the game, now I'm going to reveal that I know nothing about it.
Listeners won't see the fear in Mick's eyes at least. Remember, oh geez, I did half these interviews now and I might not know the answers. Right, here we go. So we have three rounds here. Let's go first round. As a question each. If you get it wrong, it goes to the other person for the chance to steal. Ooh. Is that clear?
Okay.
Full point steal.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So there's only 1 point come for this. Mick, name the winners of the 2018 Nicky Rackard Cup final.
Which one is Nicky Rackard? The second one. No, the Christie. Yeah. Lancashire.
Sligo.
Both wrong.
I'm wrong.
Yeah, Laurie.
Oh, Laurie Maher, damn it.
Warwickshire?
No, it's...
Donegal beat Warwickshire in the 2018 Donegal, Mickey Record Cup Donegal. Final.
God's sake.
Morris.
I stormed into
I knew the three English teams were in the finals.
Morris, yeah,
they lost them all.
Morris, I think you're going to get this one. Name the winners of the 2018 Larry Maher Cup Final.
1-0.
That's Larry.
Congratulations. So, 1-0 to Morris. You actually gave away the answer there for the second
one. He knew too.
But
yeah, I'll try and stop doing that.
Mick, name the manager of the Louth senior hurling team during 2018. Hint, you interviewed him.
I did. I rang him. I talked to him 5 times that day. His name. Can I check my phone where his name certainly is in my contacts?
Well, you can't check your phone.
Okay. Well, I wasn't going to check like the internet. I was just checking my phone to find. It's like Niall O'Rourke or something like that. Or
cool. No, it's not. Morris, a chance to steal.
No idea.
Philip O'Brien.
Brian, I knew it was an O game.
Morris, name the Westmeath hurling manager for 2018.
Oh, that's way easier though.
The hell it is. You spoke to this man.
Michael Ryan.
Yeah, but Michael Ryan is famous, like.
Famous for being the tip manager, but not for being Waterford. The Westmeath manager. What?
Oh, wait. Michael Ryan, the same Michael Ryan was Waterford manager before he was Westmeath manager.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Have I won?
No, it's not over yet. Because you've got round three.
I could get both answers.
Okay,
here.
Sorry.
Disaster.
Morris, by how many points did Limerick beat Carlow earlier this year?
I've no chance.
17?
No, it was more than that. It was closer.
It might have been more than that.
It was like 22 or something.
Okay,
like
you're both wrong. It's 24. 522 to 13.
I was so close
points.
There, I should at least get a point.
Mick, by how many points did Wexford beat Westmeath?
Like 12.
11.
11 is the right answer. Oh my word.
So I got nothing.
And Morris got 3.
Well done.
We do have a tie. I have a tiebreaker. You've won 3-0. So
yeah, this is for 6 points.
This you could.
No, I'm not risking. If I get it wrong, I lose.
Let's just do it anyway. And okay, you the winner.
Let's do it anyway. And we can both live different realities in which you've won anyway. And Mick, in your version of reality, this is worth 6 points. What was Offaly's winning margin over Dublin in the league this season? You know that game that we got all very carried away with.
In the league?
Yeah.
Who's first?
So we're going back to the very first edition of this podcast where we got crazy excited about Offaly. Morris, let you go first.
I'm going to say 3. Okay. 3, sorry.
It was higher. I think it was about 7.
It was 13 points.
Wow.
225 to 115. That's why we got all carried away.
So I got 6 points for that. For being six points off.
Look, I mean...
God, can you ask me some questions I know next time, Gavin? You're after making a fool of me there.
Look, I mean, there's only a silly little quiz. Really, Morris, you're kind of a winner. Mick, you're kind of a loser. But ultimately, I think that we can all agree...
That Galway are losers.
That hurling's the winner. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. We're going to be back next week to look ahead to the football final and possibly the papal visit. I think Mark Farley is away crafting some kind of weird... thought on that.
We got a Pope lollipop sent into the office today.
A lollipop?
A lollipop, yeah.
What flavour?
I don't know.
Do subscribe
communion
to the
podcast.
Communion flavour. Balls.ie on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, tell your friends that we exist. We'll be back next week. But from me, Mick and Morris, take it easy.